By way of history, the journal was created in statute in 1983 and has served as a compilation of public notices from state agencies. These notices would include adopted regulations, agency meetings, competitive solicitations, and the like. The journal is published weekly by the Lieutenant Governor's office at a cost of $90 per year and is currently sent to 9 out-of-state subscribers. This is down from 125 in 1993. In June of last year, Governor Knowles initiated Administrative Order 183 that requires agencies to submit public notices to a central location on the Internet, the online public notice system. Rather than searching for public notices agency by agency, the public now has the ability to go to a specific site online for this information. This legislation eliminates the requirement that the Lieutenant Governor publish the Alaska Administrative Journal and replaces it with the requirement that the Lieutenant Governor provide oversight of the Alaska Online Public Notice System. John Lindback and Carol Collins from the Lieutenant Governor's office are also here to address specific concerns in the committee.
Questions?
What is left for a written record of the things that would have been written in the Administrative Journal?
It's through the chair, Senator Halford, it's my understanding that this would be archived online and someone would be able to, by downloading the information from the Internet, have access to that same, the same information, but simply through the Internet.
So there will not be a written document.
On that point, I'd refer to the Lieutenant Governor's office if I could, and just double check that.
Go right ahead. Come on up there. Just give her your name for the record here.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Lindback from the Lieutenant Governor's office. Senator Halford, the online journal is a compilation of public notices that are already published in other places. They're published in newspapers or they're broadcast. And so those original notices back with the agencies, the written record is retained there. The online journal is, like the Alaska Administrative Journal, would be a duplication of notices that are published elsewhere. What it is a convenient sort of one-stop shopping place to look. There are written records retained in the originating agencies with those particular notices.
So there isn't any one place that you can get all the information?
Yeah, there is. There is.
Other than on the computer system.
That is
you can go back to the agency for a hard copy. You can go to the Lieutenant Governor's office to create a hard copy from the microfiche or whatever you're going to have, or you're going to have your library, whatever it is. What about notification to legislative affairs that within the old law? Looks like you change that to a state employee designated by the Lieutenant Governor to receive. Who is that?
The person who handles my understanding is that this bill would not make any changes in the notification process and who gets notice on regulations. There's no change in that provision. The person in our office who handles the processing of the regulations, we have a position that does that, currently filled by Carol Collins.
Well, the old statute said a copy goes to legislative affairs. Now it goes to a state employee designated by Lieutenant Governor to receive requests.
I see what you're referring to. Currently, the way that we've been handling the online version of the Alaska Administrative Journal is the Legislative Affairs Agency actually places that online for us. And why it's developed that way, I can't say. It's just been done that way for a long time. We did nothing to change that. And there would be no need now with the online public notice system for that legislative affairs to be responsible for that anymore.
Okay. The old system has an online complete system and a written system.
When me start back at the beginning. In 1983, the legislature adopted the Alaska Administrative Journal. The purposes of public demand, when Lieutenant Governor Palmer first took office, we started publishing the Administrative Journal online so that you could get both a hard copy or you could look online for it if you wanted to. That process resulted in a drop in subscriptions to the hard copy because people could get it free online. All right. But we received some complaints from people who regularly read the journal in that when it was placed online in that form, it wasn't searchable. It was hard to find stuff. And that's what resulted in the creation of the online public notice system, which is just the journal in another format. And it has a search function. So you can go in it, and if you just want to find out about any notices related to the airport and EAT, you can search and look just for that. If you want to look just at DOT bids, you can do a search and look just for that. It's much easier to find stuff like going online.
Is that operating right now?
Yes, it is. Okay, and we have continued, because of the statute, to do both the online public notice system and continue to place the admin journal online as well.
So you're doing what this authorizes right now?
Yes, we are.
So the only effect of the bill is to drop the printed version?
That's right. And it places...
So it should have a negative fiscal note there?
Excuse me?
So it should have a negative fiscal note instead of a zero.
Well, we've replaced one responsibility with another. Oversight of the online public notice system takes some work if you're going to do it correctly.
But you're already doing that with existing staff, right?
Yes.
Now we're going to withdraw the requirement for a printed one.
Well,
I want to know what the printed one's worth.
The printed one is in terms of
cost.
Well, we charge $90 a year.
And you got
nine subscriptions.
Right.
So,
no, I mean what it's worth in terms of actual state expenditure, not what you get paid for.
It's very small. It's not a function of expenditures, it's a little bit of time on the part of our own position. And the amount of time has decreased as the number of subscriptions have decreased.
Does it cost the state $5,000, $3,000, or $10,000? What's it cost?
Now, I would hesitate to take a wild guess. I'd have to go back and look at that, but it's expensive.
Further questions?
What about the I noticed that the requirement to publish in a newspaper actually isn't changed. It's still there.
Right.
And then it becomes an and after that. So there's going to be no diminishment of the number of public notices that we run through the press.
No, that has no effect on it. What this bill does is it comes the statute to look for any reference to the Alaska Administrative Journal and replaces that with the online public notice system, and it makes no changes to public notices other than that.
Those nine people that are still subscribing, they don't have computers or they're not hooked up to us? Or?
Well, I have a list. It's like big insurance companies like Allstate, the University of Iowa. It's fairly clear they have internet connections. I think we just haven't gotten a hold of the right person to convince them that they're wasting their money.
But you are still printing it anyhow and sending it to them.
Right, because it's the statutory requirement.
I don't have any further questions.
Is there a requirement to, where, it sounds like you said there is a requirement. Where is the requirement to publish in newspapers, for example? Is that in Section 1?
Well, Section 4, I know this. It says page 3, line 26, published in a newspaper of general circulation or trade or industry publication that the state agency prescribes, and then the word is and posted on the Internet. So the law would still remain the same. They have to publish in a general circulation. there may be other references in here, I didn't know.
The requirements for publishing in newspapers are sprinkled throughout the statute. You know, there could be hundreds of references to that.
What's the definition of a newspaper of general circulation?
We've kind of gone through that a couple times on bills I remember back several years ago, but I don't think I can quote to you what it is.
I think Deb Baer could better answer that question because she's the one who sort of rides herd on the on that issue. Since this bill doesn't address that, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question.
Thanks, guys. Deb, did you want to give us that answer? Or she's not here, but
she's not here.
Okay. Anybody else wish to testify on this?
Chairman, do you need a motion?
Yeah, I suppose I do. Yeah.
Okay. I'll move that Senate Bill number 277 move on to the next committee referral with individual recommendations.
Where does it go from here?
It goes to finance.
Okay.
Well,
the committee?
No, it doesn't.
In that case, I'm going to object to it. I can give an answer to that other question.
Okay. Didn't mean to make you do that. There is objection. Discussion? You want some questions answered? Out?
Well, yeah, I just want to, I mean, and I don't care if it moves out after that, but I'd like to know what the interplay between publishing in a newspaper and how it all works as it compares, because we've been through that a couple of times, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and sometimes those have been pretty seriously debated questions around here about what got published and what didn't. So.
Mm-hmm. And I've had some irritated contentious some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Well, could we get Lee Jordan on the phone and ask him?
Now he knows who's important.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, how?
Or Lou Williams.
This is a question that can't be answered today.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, because I need to find out what the definition is.
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion at this time.
No intent to stop it. No, we'll bring it up at the next meeting. I'm sure that'll be enough time. Or the one after it, but within the next week or so, we'll get back to this. Thank you, guys. House Bill 77. We don't have Mr. Roseberg here.
He's in conference, Mr. Chairman.
He'd be better off here.
Yes, I'll agree.
Have we considered that an acceptable excuse, caucus?
I don't think we should.
Surgery, now that's a good excuse.
There's an excuse, yeah. Well,
sometimes it's the same.
The sharp knives are out.
Could be that time of year already. Would you like to give us an overview, please?
Sure. For the record, my name is Janet Seiss. I'm a member of Representative Roseberg's staff. House Bill 67 adds some conditions regarding the release of perpetrators of sexual abuse and sexual assault cases. It is similar to what is in current law regarding stalking and domestic violence. It requires that a judge consider the safety of the victim, of the alleged victim, in the public, and that if there are, if the accused is on medication, that they should take their medication, reside in a place where they're not going to come in contact with the alleged victim, and other conditions that may be applicable. And it also requires that a judge check to see if the victim or victim's representative is in court to testify and to ask if they have any comments. This arose from a case with a constituent who had a young daughter who was victimized by a neighbor, and at that arraignment, the alleged perpetrator changed his plea to no contest. The bail hearing was held within 24 hours. The victim's mother was not notified of the bail hearing and could not testify. The judge allowed bail on a very loose conditions.
Judge?
I don't know. Well, there's a letter in the packet from the mother that was addressed to Judge Anderson. The attorney general had asked for 24-hour supervision and didn't get it. The gentleman still had his apartment in the complex where the mother and the child were located, even though he wasn't supposed to go there. I mean, his belongings were still there, and he was staying with another friend. And so the mother suggested that we do something about seeing that the victim was considered in cases of sexual abuse. And we do, there are letters of support in your packet from Victims for Justice, the Thunder Woman's Coalition, the Sitkins Against Family Violence, the Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, and the Alaska Peace Officer Association, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody from the Department of Law?
We did work both with Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law and with Doug Wolver from the court system on this language.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Oscar, go ahead.
Janet, on page 2, line 2, the residence you were just speaking of, what that the person reside in a place where the person is not likely to come into contact with the alleged victim. We don't mean a different community. We mean a different apartment complex,
yes,
for example, or how far away do they have to be? Or
well, in this case that I was talking about, the judge did put a 3-mile limit on that a perpetrator could not come within 3 miles of the victim.
Not live within?
Could not come within 3 miles. So he didn't get to live in the same apartment complex, Mr. Chairman. He was in another area, but the victim's mother was concerned that because his belongings were in that apartment complex, he might be tempted or want to come back without her knowing that, so she could remove her child from the environment.
And that was just a stipulation by that judge in that particular case.
Yes, Mr.
Do you happen to know if that's a usual kind of order from a judge in these kinds of situations?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I Senator Ellis, I don't know if it's a usual.
And on the next line, on line 4 there, the third, if the person is on medication, that person take the medication as prescribed. So it's the medicine prescribed by a doctor and essentially ordered by the judge.
That's my understanding, Mr. Chairman. I've seen this language in other bail things, but I'm drawing a blank on which one. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, this medication is not a new invention. It's in other laws right now.
And we're talking about the kinds of medications that reduce a person's sex drive in the interest of them not committing these kinds of crimes? So.
If that's what they've been prescribed at the time, Mr. Chairman, it says if the person is on medication that the person has, take the medications prescribed.
But it doesn't seem like we're talking about, you know, skin treatment medication or... I was just trying to have a better understanding of exactly what you were trying to ensure would happen. I mean, what's the interest in this legislation of having someone take their heart medicine? I mean, we're concerned about them taking their... I mean, some people would hope they wouldn't take their heart medicine, and that might be the end of the situation, but... I suppose we're talking about those kinds of medications that directly impact a person's behavior.
Mr. Chairman, I would think that would be, it could be a range of medicines. There maybe there's more than one medication involved, but in this case, we're more interested that if the person is on some antidepressant or any other kind of medication that would help them control their behavior, that be, and they're prescribed, that be considered by the judge.
Well, Senator Ellis kind of went to his concern is about the inability of someone, particularly of
village. Because what that does to a villager who is charged is it forces them to stay in a larger community where they're subject to all the predators and all the problems that may have gotten them in trouble in the first place, alcohol, drugs. And I'm just concerned that it's not the intent of the legislation to keep someone from going back to their community. And a 3-mile limit in most of the villages probably says you can't land at the airport.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's the sponsor's intention, but on the other hand, the sponsor is concerned that if the victim out there, the victim needs some protection. And if the judge decides that 2 blocks is fine, or 3 blocks is fine, or 3 miles is fine, I use 3 miles just because that's what the judge decided in this particular case in Anchorage.
And in Anchorage, I totally agree with that.
Right. But it does say that may impose. It doesn't say that they have to impose, but they should consider these three things when they're developing a bail plan.
I just wanted to that the record to reflect that the discussion was that in the case of smaller communities, it would be the absolute most egregious case of significant danger where you'd restrict someone from going back to their community where they have the support system and they may have the ability to avoid alcohol and drugs, where they don't have that ability in the regional centers or the larger communities.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Halford, that is the intent of the representative. But just wanted the judges to make sure, or the court to make sure that they considered this.
I haven't got a problem with their considering it, and I think the priority for protection of the victim is obviously the best one, but I am concerned about someone who has not been convicted yet of anything, and who is told for maybe an extended period of time that they not only can't go back to their property, they can't even go back to their hometown.
My frustration is that upon reviewing this case, it appears that you would achieve exactly the same result under this law. If we pass this law, part of my concern is that this occurred in Anchorage. Anchorage has probably one of the most efficient Anchorage and Fairbanks arraignment systems in the entire state. We actually arraign people through the use of television videos without even transporting them from the jail. They're taken into a special room. The judge comes on the TV. The defendant is on the TV, and an arraignment takes place. Under Alaska rules of criminal procedure, that individual must be given an opportunity for a bail hearing if they've been taken into custody within 24 hours. I've frequently seen a situation where an arrest warrant is issued. The person isn't arrested until after the close of business that day, and they end up in jail at, say, 3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever. There's no time to transport them or get to them. But let's say 9 or 10 o'clock at night, they pick the guy up at some bar, take him into the jail. Maybe not even in a condition to be arraigned for a while. Then the arraignment needs to take place. They get jammed up over there. And the arraignment is something that is a very administrative function. Now, the court has all sorts of authority. It's my understanding in this case that the district attorney, on behalf of the victim, actually recommended a 24-hour-a-day supervision. So somebody was there advocating on these issues. They just totally disregarded this victim. And furthermore, when Judge Anderson made his decision on it, he came up with a 3-mile perimeter that the person was not supposed to get closer than that to that individual or that victim. I guess I can understand if without the 24-hour-a-day supervision, somehow he might come within the 3-mile thing. I know that if the district attorney had any concerns about that bail hearing, he could ask for a subsequent reconsideration and bail review hearing if he felt that the victim was truly being threatened or in some sort of bad situation. But after we've passed all this, all a district attorney has to say to the court is, we tried to call them and we didn't get an answer at their house. That's all this bill says they have to do. And I don't see where we gain any result for the victim that is preferable or something. I mean, by passing the bill, we may assure victims out there or give them the false confidence that something additional or new is going to happen. When in point of fact, as a practical matter, people get busy and they're just going to tell the judge, we tried to call them and couldn't reach them. And that's all they have to do, and this entire law has been satisfied. The judge, of course, has to make the inquiry of the prosecuting attorney, did you make the phone call? So they know they're going to get asked. But it just seems to me that we may be trying to tell people that we're doing a lot more than what we're really going to accomplish through this legislation. Was there anything else you wanted?
I was just going to respond, Mr. Chairman, that Representative Rookberg is very concerned about the victims being notified. And we know there's other places where this could happen, but in the case that we were dealing with, it was arraignment, change of hearing, 24 hours, nobody called the victim until after the hearing. And she had indicated an interest in testifying, so I'm not blaming the prosecutors. They have a formidable task, but this would at least have the prosecutor put on the record that, yes, they did try. And then if there are people in the courtroom, the judge would have to ask if the victim or the victim's representative wanted to make some comments before the bail hearing.
Through the victim's rights legislation that we have passed, notification
is sitting in the House.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Mr. Roper can address that. is it still sitting over there?
Oh, yeah. It's in House Finance since last year. Often victim advocates, it gives them professional help so that they don't get lost in this process.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. As you understand the committee's reaction when you said Mr. Rookberg is real concerned about those five victims, we're more concerned than that. We put money behind it and have a pretty serious group out there, I think, wanting to do it. So thank you very much.
Thank
I
you.
Have a lady on teleconference, Ms. Fox. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes. Ms. Pat Fox, go right ahead, out of Fairbanks.
Yes, I wanted to talk about this bill a little bit, and just generally. I was a rape victim 7 years ago. It happened in a village where there was no village public safety officer. There was no law enforcement whatsoever. I had to move into town to get away from the situation. But there were witnesses that testified in the hearing that were going to testify in the court hearing that lived up there. He was released on $300 bail to go back to his village where he could harass the witnesses. And there was no protection for them. He also came into town a lot, which was against his bail conditions of release. And I was told that if I reported seeing him, it wasn't good enough. Somebody else had to report seeing him. He harassed me. Then he was convicted, and he's just now been taken into custody. He was allowed on bail while it was appealed. This was a first-degree rape. I've been harassed for 7 years. And what I was told was that while he was out on bail pending the outcome of the appeal, and the judges, it's been through the appeals court twice and went to the Supreme Court once, and each time they upheld it. What I was told was that while he was out on bail, that they did not supervise those bail conditions. They didn't enforce them unless somebody happened to point out that he broke the law. It's a really bad system the way it's set up, and I'm worried that the bill is really vague in the sense that it doesn't provide anything substantial. Right now, if you happen to be a rape victim, I was just sleeping in my cabin when I was raped. And, you know, if you're a rape victim, the only way that you have any protection is if you go and hide in a shelter. I couldn't afford to hide in a shelter for 7 years. You know, a person still has to go on with their life. The Attorney General's office said it was illegal for him to be out since he was convicted of first-degree sexual assault, but the judge was allowed to leave him out. And he violated his bail conditions, and he was picked up in Fort Yukon where another rape occurred, but they chose to call it a bail violation. Right now, the state of Alaska does not really take seriously sexual assault, and it's just as bad as an assault as any other first-degree assault. And, you know, there's life and death involved here, too, because those guys don't want to go to jail. You know, I've had death threats ever since I reported this rape. And, you know, I'm grateful he's going to finally be sentenced and he is in jail finally. But I think you need to look at the situation entirely as far as the fact that if a perpetrator is allowed out on bail while he's appealing and or pending the trial, releasing him to a place where there's no protection for the victim nor witnesses is, you know, you're just allowing something to happen that shouldn't be happening. I was almost relieved when I heard this bill was coming up, but after reading it, I could see that there was nothing really solid about it. And I guess that's all I wanted to say. If you want, you have any questions?
Senator Alford does, Pat. Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, I don't know, and it's to the committee as well. It would seem that maybe what we should be looking at is a prohibition on release after conviction pending appeal on a certain class of crimes, and certainly these are the crimes that you're talking about. Now, once you're convicted, while my attitude is a little different towards someone who's only accused, but once you've been convicted, you shouldn't be able to stay out for 7 years or 6 years or 5 years while it's under appeal. That would actually have some teeth if we changed this bill to say, the title is an act relating to release of certain persons alleged to have committed certain sexual offenses. Well, it deals with both alleged and having committed. I think it deals with the entire process. If it would fit under the title, that's what we ought to put in this bill, because then it would have some teeth.
I can tell you, in I think it's Australia and also England, you don't get out on appeal after conviction. You continue to serve your time, and when you win your appeal, you get out of jail. Well, you know, that's the benefit. They don't have as a consequence over there. However, if you're appealing a sentence and you're already serving it during the period of time that you are in jail and awaiting the decision on appeal, you get no credit for time served, which means you've got something pretty significant invested in the appeal yourself. But as a consequence, they never see a specious appeal over there except by by lifers. The lifer has absolutely nothing to lose either way, so they'll appeal everything. But those people that have something to lose aren't going to give up an extra. Of course, appeals over there only take 6 to 9 months, too.
Well, the language says, before ordering release, before or after trial, or pending appeal of a person convicted of.
That's different than the title.
Yeah, the title is more restrictive than the language currently in the bill. I guess the first question you should ask,
parallel to the status quo language.
Yeah.
You have to look at it.
Do you have a copy of it?
No, but this is a new section.
He's adding a new section.
Not a repealed and reenacted section. So he is adding a section that deals with release before or after trial or pending appeal.
Yeah, it looks to me like the drafters made a mistake.
Are there others here who wish to testify on 67? My former representative Representative Boucher is with us. It's good to see you, Red.
Thank you, sir.
Let's request an analysis of the title, and I would encourage us to put a couple feet in.
Yeah, I'd feel better about it, too, if I feel doing a little bit more than what it does right now. Any objection, John?
I'll have to see what the work product is.
Sure. Why the objection is doing it?
No, we should pursue it.
There's a motion for us to we'll hold the bill to take up further research with our legislative drafters to get a better analysis on this, and also to consider, and we'll work with the sponsor on this, to consider adding some teeth as far as those people who have been convicted and what their bail conditions or conditions of release might be following conviction pending appeal.
Anytime you're dealing with a violent act against a person, and there's any potential danger to that person, I believe we should restrict the release during an appeal. After the conviction.
After the conviction. Prior to that, it becomes pretty difficult to do much more than what you've already got.
And until you get a conviction, you don't have a constitution behind you to do that.
That's right.
That's the rub.
Okay, no objection to that, and that'll be our game plan.
It shouldn't.
And we'll visit both of these again. Anything further? All right, thank you. We are adjourned.
We changed this 18-9.